Welcome one and all to the Damage Report. I'm John Arola, and I am very lucky to be joined by a national treasure. Michael Shore returns to the Damage Report. Michael Shore, how's it going?
It's great. Great to be back. Great to fight you as to whether or not I'm a national treasure. But no, it's great to be on, John. Thanks for having me. I always love coming on the Damage Report and doing this and being a dragon.
Being draconic. No, I appreciate you being here. I was telling my team, because a lot of our producers, they haven't been here for years and years and years. That they may not know, and I'll also mention this so that the audience may not know that you have been contributing to TYT for like 21 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, since the day after I was on from day two. So
day two, okay.
Two.
You couldn't have showed up on day one.
I know, right? I had a dentist appointment. I know it was in Jenk's living room at his apartment.
Yeah.
And we did it from there for a while thereafter. And we had I think we had staged calls. If they weren't staged, there were people we knew who would call in.
It's clever.
It was clever. Yeah, we were really ahead of our time.
That was kind of Donald Trump's strategy for promoting himself in the late 80s. But
it wasn't quite that way. It was just, let's keep this busy. So, yeah. And it wasn't people calling and saying what a great job we're doing. There'd be somebody calling and asking about,
sure,
Bush or something. Yeah.
That makes sense. And by the way, also in terms of history, Michael Shore was the first person to put me on camera outside of the TYT University show that I hosted when I appeared on 2012, back during an election. I'm not going to be specific.
Did 2012 not predate your appearance? Not predate TYT University? I think we're gonna.
I mean, I was hired to do TYT University.
Right, but had it aired? Like, I feel like you, like the day I put you on the day or two after you got
possible.
There.
Yeah. I don't know. We're gonna have to go back to the archives.
Yeah.
But in any event, the news rolls on ever since then. I keep writing letters to the news to tell it to stop for a little bit and let us all catch up, but they go unanswered. Yeah. So we're gonna have to talk about the news, including multiple bits of breaking news, some of it good. Actually, quite a bit of this breaking news is pretty good. So we're gonna be starting off with that in just a sec. Good news for us, good news for the country, bad news for Donald Trump potentially. And we're also gonna be jumping into the militarization of the border in Texas, some of the abuses of migrants that we're learning about there. Ron DeSantis's personal army that he's building. Lauren Boebert facing perhaps a fatal challenge for 2024. And Jesse Waters has now replaced Tucker Carlson. We're gonna take you through a little bit of who he is, what role he plays in Fox, and one of the big critics of his first episode, his mom, who called in live to give him some advice. We're gonna be responding to that and more. That's all just in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, we're also gonna be talking about GOP senators apparently just now realizing that their constituents are insane, and a segment that I think we're gonna refer to as Snow White Supremacy. That'll be coming up in the aftermath. So everyone buckle up for that. Hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And you can reach out to Michael and I with comments, super chats, and more. And we'll respond as we go. With all that said, Michael, you ready to start the show?
I am indeed. Let's go to Jack Smith's office, right?
Let's do it. Well, wait, we're gonna take a brief detour just to mention. We're not gonna do like a full thing, but last week we talked about Kim Reynolds, governor of Iowa, passing basically an abortion ban at 6 weeks. Yeah. The idea is to cut out as many abortions as possible. That has been temporarily put on hold. A judge has ruled that the law's constitutionality doesn't need to be evaluated. So while that is on hold, abortions up to 20 weeks of pregnancy are now once again legal in Iowa. So they knew that this was gonna be challenged. Their attempt to do this exact same thing back in 2019 had been ruled unconstitutional. We're gonna have to see what the Supreme Court thinks. Oh gee, I wonder. But anyway, a little bit of good news, Michael. Yeah. Oh, I think you might have muted yourself.
Sorry, I did mute myself. I mean, I think that's very good news. And I think that what you are, what we're seeing as these very extreme measures come out of state legislatures are the courts stepping in and pushing pause on a lot of them. Doesn't always endure, but the pauses are getting respect from higher courts as well, which is still a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, so fingers crossed for that. We'll definitely be watching as we go. But with that, now it's time to head to Mr. Smith's office. We've got some breaking news for you. Bad news for Donald Trump, who announced on Truth Social that he has received yet another target letter. Basically a letter letting him know that he is the target of an investigation. In this particular case, it is once again from the special counsel, Jack Smith, and it apparently is in connection with his investigation into efforts to overturn the results of the election in 2020. This means, without confirming, and bear in mind this is all coming from Donald Trump and his sources, that he is the target of the investigation and he is likely to be indicted. There's still a lot that we don't know. Attempts to get Jack Smith so far to comment on it have not been returned. It is possible he'll do some sort of press conference. That's generally how this has gone in the past. And two people close to Mr. Trump have confirmed that he did receive the letter, for whatever that's worth. They are people who keep close to Donald Trump, so you know, bounds of reason on them, but it is not impossible to believe. Now, this would mark the second time that Mr. Smith has notified Mr. Trump that he's a target in a federal investigation. You might recall back in June when this happened in relation to the classified documents. That resulted in 37 criminal counts. There could be more, covering 7 different violations of federal law. So this does not necessarily mean that it's going to lead to that same sort of severity or number of charges. It might not lead to charges at all. But if you were wondering if there will be charges, this certainly seems to take us down that road a little bit. Michael, what do you make of this?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's any question, and it's not a question of the number of charges. I think that many people have been watching each of the cases, from Fulton County in Georgia to the documents to E. Jean Carroll to the Stormy Daniels, to January 6th and what happened there, have looked at that case as being potentially the worst for the former president. And because of that, when you hear that he's getting out ahead of it and saying that he's gotten this letter, that he is a target of the investigation, all of that, they know, his legal team knows that this was coming, and that Smith was keying in on this. And a lot of the people that he's made deals with, from Mark Meadows on down, are in the effort to see what Trump's involvement was on January 6th and in denying the results of the election. It would be hard to believe that some charges aren't coming.
Fingers all the way crossed on that. So, as I alluded to, it is not clear what aspect of the investigation into the election that this is actually targeting him for. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just one. It could be multiple different areas. There are certainly some juicy possibilities. They've looked into an array of schemes that Mr. Trump and his allies have used to stave off defeat. So we know that Jared Kushner appeared before one of the grand juries just in June. Rudy Giuliani had a recent interview with prosecutors. We know some of the areas that have been investigated. So that includes ads and email messages that sought to fundraise off false claims of election fraud, and the decision by Republican electors in some states won by Biden to send signed statements purporting to affirm that Trump is the victor. So it could be something as relatively minor as the false, you know, like false premise of this advertising stuff. If that's all they ended up like targeting him on, that would seem like not nearly enough. But then you also have the false elector scheme. We know that's been a big part of their interviews. There's obviously January 6th. That could potentially be a part of it. Perhaps the pressure campaign on Mike Pence, the threats that were made there. It's really hard to say for sure. Most of these, I think, though, like they would instantly be harder to prove than the classified document stuff, which I think is about as cut and dried as is possible legally. But all of this is incredibly significant. I think for many people, the different charges that he's faced, while serious, they don't individually rise to the level of the actual attempt to overthrow the results of the election. Bear in mind, all of this is separate from the Georgia investigation, Fulton County, which, by the way, he also got bad news on this week. The Georgia Supreme Court unanimously rejected his bid to head off potential indictment in that, saying he makes no showing that he has been prevented fair access to the ordinary channels. He is asking this court to step in and itself decide the motions currently pending in the Superior Court. This is not the sort of relief that this court affords, at least absent extraordinary circumstances that petitioner has not shown are present here. So that also could be coming supposedly as early as the 31st of this month, or perhaps in the weeks to follow. So some very serious threats, different options. It's impossible to say, but do you have any kind of read on where they might be landing on this?
No, I mean, in Fulton County, I don't. I mean, we all know the same sets of facts, and we all know what has been said by Brad Raffensperger there, by the governor there, Brian Kemp. Raffensperger is the Secretary of State. We know that there are others in Georgia who have accused the former president of doing things in the interim between Election Day and Inauguration Day, 2020 to 2021, that were untoward, illegal. We've heard recordings, so we know what the prosecutors there have. And I even say, you know, what the January 6th committee did, a lot of people were frustrated that Congress changed hands, that committee dissolved. But a lot of the work they did is work that Jack Smith and his team have jumped on. A lot of those same witnesses are witnesses they've subpoenaed and talked to. So it really went a long way toward getting the attention of federal prosecutors, and that's what this was about. So I think some of the worst stuff is still in Washington. I still think the incite to riot stuff is the smaller part of it, but it's not absent that. And I also believe that a lot of what we're hearing about the pressure campaign to remain in office started in the Oval Office, which is going to be a big part of what Jack Smith is after.
Yeah, it's entirely possible that they have, you know, actual witness testimony about what happened, you know, after the election on January 6th and the lead up to it. There's a lot that we could potentially find out. Even once the charges come out, there are more charges that could come during the trial. We've already been told that that's a possibility with the classified documents.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, buckle up, we're not nearly at the end of this. That said, this story was basically broken by Donald Trump. So it's only fair that we give you a little bit of his thoughts about this. Trump set fire basically to the political discourse of the day by revealing that this targeting letter by Jack Smith had been sent to him. And it's super serious that he could be facing yet more charges, in particular over an attempt to overthrow the election. So his communiques about it have, of course, had the gravitas that you would expect, starting with this statement that says, "Wow, on Sunday night, while I was with my family, having just arrived from the Turning Point event in Florida, where I won the straw poll." He goes on to talk about polling, like the polls that he did. You're facing more charges. Can you stay focused? It's a straw poll of right-wing weirdos. But he has to mention it. He has to plug himself. He goes on to say that he's got horrifying news for the country given to me by my attorneys. He once again calls Jack Smith deranged. And then goes on to say his issue is not so much the fact that there's a targeting letter letting him know that he is a target of this investigation into the attempt to overthrow the election. It really is about the impoliteness of it, because he says again, sent a letter again. It was Sunday night, stating that I'm a target of the What does that matter? Like, I mean, I hate to ruin, like, that's sometimes prime HBO viewing time. Like, I don't want to ruin, but House of the Dragon isn't back yet for season two. Last of Us, we're still waiting to find out if they're going to start filming again. There's a strike, Trumpy, okay? Sunday nights are not as sacred as they used to be. And so he really wants to stress that. He goes on, this has been a never ending fight from the day I came down the escalator, blah, blah, blah. He has this theory that it is, no matter when these things happen, it will always be the case that it will not be legitimate because of something that happened recently. So in this case, you know, they didn't have like a hearing that implied that Biden had gotten millions of dollars from the Ukrainians or something. So they got to find something else. It's less than 24 hours after I suggested during a major speech that the federal government assume control of a filthy, unsanitary, neglected, and crime-ridden Washington, D.C. What is the theory here that like the mayor of DC was so spooked by the possibility that control could be wrested by the federal government that they decided to roll out this letter instantly? Like, yes, many things happened in America right before the letter was sent to you. That doesn't mean that they're significant. Coincidences are a thing. So anyway, he's frustrated. We're gonna give you some of the responses from other people, but Michael, he has been very successful in the last year or so in taking all of what should be objectively bad news. Generally, being indicted is bad for politicians, and it so far hasn't really been bad news for him, at least in the primary. So is this gonna be any different, or is this in fact going to be, because the charges are more significant and they're directly about the election, could this actually be the best news for him?
Well, yeah, in a sense it could, because his fundraising goes up every time one of these indictments happens. But where it's bad news for him is not with the minions that are already subscribed to what he says, believes, and you know, pretends he's doing. Where it is going to be very sort of damaging to him is in attracting those independent voters that put him over the top in 2016. People say, oh, you always said that Trump was going to lose in 2016. You were wrong. Now you're saying he's going to lose in 2020. Well, you know, you already said you were already wrong about it. We know more now. We know a lot more. And the people that put that election over were not the people in his 30% of immovable voters. They were the ones who said, all right, you know what? This guy wants to drain the swamp. We want something new. We don't like Hillary Clinton, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the people that are not coming back to Donald Trump. And that's why that number is in a general election is not going to move as much.
Yeah, perhaps we'll see. I mean, this is the sort of thing that you would expect that some of the people running against him would jump on. I personally think that this is even more dangerous territory to criticize him on than others. But that said, Nikki Haley, who has often said that she doesn't want to kick sideways or something, she did say we can't keep dealing with this drama in response to the announcement. So that's, you know, that's in the neighborhood of a criticism, I suppose. Not everyone is ready to do that. Vivek Ramaswamy says that January 6th was just a quote friendly preview of what's to come for America. So that's fun. Love that. As if we needed the reminder that future coups are not impossible to imagine. And then you have one of the bulldogs for Donald Trump, Marjorie Greene, who had this to say.
That's absolutely good. Yeah, that's my reaction. This is the only way that the Democrats have to beat President Trump is to arrest him, smear him, charge him with ridiculous charges, all in a cover up of Joe Biden's crimes, Hunter Biden's crimes. It's unbelievable. It's hard to even recognize that this is our country. The American people are going to be furious. And what Jack Smith is doing is the weaponized government.
Okay, rarely has projection been as projecty as what you just saw right there. She transitioned like without a pause, without a breath, and without conscious thought from they're just trying to take him down with fake charges because they can't beat him otherwise. Oh, by the way, did you know that Biden and Hunter Biden have committed a bunch of crimes? Can you like take a breath between those two things? I understand you want to beat Biden by locking him up or whatever. That doesn't mean that Trump didn't do a coup. If Joe Biden had led a mob of people into like a Ukrainian bank to get $5 million, I would feel a little bit more confident about your claims against him. But the only guy who did something like that was Trump. I know that you want to pretend that it didn't happen, but most people can still easily remember it. So anyway, they're, like you said, he's going to raise a bunch of money. They're all going to be campaigning around this. Fox is going to go into defense mode. Hopefully Chris Christie will be attacking him, but that's all I can really imagine at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the attacks from the other candidates, you would expect them, right? They're running against Donald Trump here. So when you have an indictment against one of your opponents in politics across the board, you jump on that, right? They're not doing that. And part of the reason they're not doing that is they think there is a belief, and it's why so many people are running, that Donald Trump will not be a candidate by the time the election 2024 happens. But you still want to hang on to the people who adhere to him. So if you are kinder to him now, later on you may reap the rewards of that. It is the most disingenuous politics that we could see, or have seen. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, we'll be watching. Now that said, I like following the campaign as much as you know anyone, probably more than most. I do find it fascinating. But that said, I also do want to talk about the stakes. We should never forget that if Donald Trump becomes president again, it's going to mean a lot. And I don't just mean that we can expect years more of tweets like this from Bridget Gabriel, of two of our nation's greatest advocates for civil rights, MLK and DJT. And I just hate that so much. I just don't like that there's a technology that can easily produce stuff like that. No, that's not what I'm talking at all about though. I'm talking about his apparent plans to supercharge his direct unilateral control over the US government. There was a report that came out earlier this week talking with some of his allies. By the way, this is not speculation. This is not people digging through the documents. This is what they're talking about in speeches, Trump and other advocates and surrogates of his. So here are some of the components of it. Mr. Trump intends to bring independent agencies like the Federal Communications Commission, which makes and enforces rules for television and internet companies, and the Federal Trade Commission, which enforces various antitrust and other consumer protection rules against businesses, under direct presidential control. He also wants to revive the practice of impounding funds, so refusing to spend money that Congress has appropriated for programs a president doesn't like. So if there are components of Build Back Better or the climate bill that you like, he might just pretend that that doesn't exist. So that could be fun. He intends to strip employment protections from tens of thousands of career civil servants, making it easier to replace them if they're deemed obstacles to his agenda. So basically clearing out most of the expertise, experience, and institutional knowledge of the federal bureaucracy and replacing them from people from the crowd at Turning Point USA events or something, I suppose. He also, of course, wants to scour the intelligence agencies, the State Department, the defense bureaucracies to remove officials he has vilified as, quote, the sick political class that hates our country. All of this is under this unilateral theory of the executive, the idea that although it has never been adjudicated to be the case, and the Constitution is pretty clear that there are checks and balances between the three different branches of the government. No, in fact, somehow the executive branch is on its own and can't be constrained in any way whatsoever. It's the best and it should rule that way. And they intend to really try that out as a strategy if he becomes president again. Michael, what do you make of this?
Well, it's exactly what you're talking about, but it rises to another level. Anytime we've seen the only precedents that we have for government run this way by only people who agree with you, by getting like minds in there and also weeding out people who will not facilitate what your agenda is, who will do their job but not facilitate your agenda, are fascist governments. In the past, are occasionally communist governments that are unilateral in that way. And this kind of monolithic thinking is exactly what Trump said he wasn't gonna do last time and tried to do. And now he's doing it and saying he's gonna do it, or he's saying he's gonna do it. So at least there's an openness from Trump that we didn't previously have. So we have to embrace that. But what he's opening up to is frightening, unprecedented. Only in that it has created fascism.
Yeah, 100%. And having lived through and worked through one whole term of Donald Trump, we know his worst excesses. We know the ways that he undercuts himself. But I am not looking forward to nearly another half decade of just like hoping he gets bored of governing and just goes and plays golf and doesn't destroy the republic.
And now he will have vengeance, which he didn't have before, right? So he would be coming in as a president who would have a list of people he would go after and wrongs, grievances that he would try and correct in his estimation. But again, what you just said is why I don't think he has a chance of winning. The difference now is that we have had 4 years of Donald Trump as president. So we know more than we knew then, and collectively we do. And also people who do pay attention to this know and regret what happened.
Yeah. Everyone buckle up. It's gonna be an exciting and consequential presidential race. Okay, with that said, we're gonna take our first break of the hour. When we come back, Jesse Waters is the new big man at Fox News. We're gonna talk a little bit about what that might mean, what it might look like after this. Jesse Waters is now kind of one of the biggest voices, I guess, on Fox News. He's replaced Tucker Carlson with a big time slot, potentially a big audience. And so we just want to let you know a little bit of what he's probably going to use that time for. Now, one of the things that Jesse Waters has been on an absolute tear about over the past year or so is attacking homeless people, attacking the unhoused community, almost literally. And Media Matters has done an amazing job of collecting some examples of that. What I had not realized was how far back this actually goes. This is not, in fact, a new thing for him. Take a look at this montage.
Homelessness isn't about lack of affordable housing. It's about drug addicts that want to wander around and live in tents on the sidewalk. You can't celebrate people with purple hair, with nose rings, four kids with four different men who are dressed like trash. You have to call them what they are. These are people that have failed in life and they're on their deathbed. Look at all the money Democrats throw at the homeless. Denver gives $2 million to homeless, as long as they're women or transgender. San Francisco passed a similar plan, $1,200 a month to homeless, but again, they have to be transgender. Homeless people rule the streets in LA. They set up nice little tent cities right there on the sidewalks. They sling dookie at you if you disturb them. And now they even have their own laundromat. Yep, I actually saw a homeless guy today on the Upper East Side with a phone. And he was in a sleeping bag. It was like an REI sleeping bag. It was a really nice sleeping bag. They shouldn't have all this kind of stuff.
Okay, so he is clearly one of the most disgusting, reprehensible human beings in America today. I just want to also be clear. He has been doing this since long before his appearances on The Five or his own show. Back on the O'Reilly Factor, when he was plucked from obscurity, that I think suited him quite well. He would do segments where he would go and do man on the street stuff, harassing and taunting unhoused individuals. And that has only gotten worse over time. So you saw in that, he hates unhoused people that dress in a way that he doesn't like. He doesn't like that they're dirty, but also to be clear, he doesn't want them to have access to a laundromat. So it's really not clear exactly what state he wants their clothes to be in. He thinks that it is insane that they might have a phone. I mean, how could you afford a phone if you can't afford rent, which is far more expensive? It doesn't actually make any sense, but it's good for him. Basically, anything that he needs to say to justify the hatred, fear, suspicion that he has towards these people and make the audience feel more comfortable with doing literally nothing, that's his purpose. I mean, when he's doing segments where he says that like a major city has a program that spends $2 million and we're supposed to hear that number and think that that's too much, that's too many. Oh, and it's going towards women. So we should hate it more. I don't even understand exactly what the argument here is, other than the fact that he despises these people. What do you think?
Yeah, it is also a way of having successful partisan conversation, because so many of America's big cities are ruled by Democratic or governed by Democratic mayors. The problem is that when that has not been the case, this has still been a problem. Rudy Giuliani had spent $500 million in the 1990s as mayor of New York on the homeless issue. So the money being spent on homelessness does not know any sort of party line. The way that mayors have struggled of both parties, Democrats and Republicans, to resolve this issue is, you know, it's been convoluted by courts, by political passions. But this thread that runs through the way that Jesse Waters believes is obviously an insight into what his show is going to be like now that he's taken over the show, and what is informing his conversation about social issues in general. It's the haves that he's addressing, and he's villainizing the have-nots in every case. And it's not to say that there aren't points to be made about homelessness that are not just about looking at them as needing our aid at every turn, and that there aren't other ways of attacking the homeless issue. But the point is, he looks at this in a way that has no empathy, and it has been agendaized for the kind of broadcasting he does, and it runs through the way he looks at every other problem. Yeah. So it's despicable.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically a semi-sentient boat shoe. Like, he doesn't know people in these sorts of situations, and he has no intellectual curiosity or empathy that would lead him to learn about these people. They're a punchline.
Yeah, John, just to interrupt briefly, you're looking at some mayors now, from Eric Adams in New York, who is imperfect in many ways, obviously, but pilot programs that are going on in cities around the country, Democratic and Republican run cities, that are finding success by mandating people get treatment for an extended period of time, not just for the 3 days that it used to be, but in some cases for hundreds of days, and they're finding success with it. Jesse Waters would have you just walk all over those people and villainize them from the get-go.
Yeah, like, and walking over them would be nicer than much of his actual ideas. He wants forced, like, you know, barricade, like bulldozing entire areas. They talked about setting up camps outside of cities and forcibly shipping people to the camps. I mean, this is a guy who talks about sprinkler systems to soak them so they can't sleep, or like have dogs that bark or speakers playing music so that they can't sleep and they have to leave. Like, this is a fundamental, like, dehumanization. And look, this is one of the most direct, I think, examples of what the point of a Fox News is. It is to take a community that might, for whatever reason, be capable of empathy, maybe because they're like religious or just they feel some sort of human compassion, and you tell them why they shouldn't so that the government doesn't have to spend any money pursuing any policies. And yet, thus they don't have to raise taxes to raise the money to spend on the policies.
And the audience they're trying to cultivate is, or always was, based on conservative Christianity and evangelical Christianity. And these are some of the least, whether they're right or wrong or good or bad or anything, they are certainly at their core some of the least Christian positions to have on something like homelessness.
Definitely. Well, look, we're obviously critics of Jesse Waters, but he has a worse one. Jesse Waters received a call live on his show from his mother, who had some advice for him. Take a look.
We have a very special guest on the line, a Democrat, my mom. Mom? Hello there, Mom. How have you enjoyed the show so far?
I have enjoyed the show. I want to say congratulations, Honey Bun. We are so proud of you and your accomplishments.
Thank you.
And you've worked so hard. Now let's aim to have you keep your job. And to that end, I do have some suggestions.
Okay.
Do not tumble into any conspiracy rabbit holes. We do not want to lose you, and we want no lawsuits.
Okay.
We need you to be kind and respectful. Okay. You yourself mentioned that humble is a stretch, so I get that. Use your voice responsibly to promote conversation that maintains a narrative thread. There really has been enough Biden bashing, and the laptop is old.
So some general advice. This is assuming that is actually his mom, and I'll take it at face value that is actually his mom. She's clearly proud of him, thinks he's worked hard. I mean, he's done a lot of hours of video. I suppose that in this industry that counts as putting in your work, I suppose. But she also had advice on some particular topics. Take a look at this.
You could suggest that your people take less interest, for example, in other people's bodies and talk about that.
Well, wait. We're trying to keep other people's interest away from children's bodies. That was the point of that segment. Mom,
I
love you.
Wait.
I knew this was a bad idea.
Seek solutions versus fanning the flames. You could encourage that Bedminster friend of yours to return to his earlier career on television. Everyone in his audience could wear a red hat, and I'm sure the ratings would soar, although never as high, my darling, as yours on Jesse Waters Primetime. Good luck.
Thank you very much, Mom. I love you very much.
And I love you. I'm thinking that a small dinner between 5 and 8
would
be the
way to
go.
We gotta go, Mom. This is just like how things are at home.
Okay, so I don't know his mom. I don't know his mom or his dad. She seems like a compassionate, reasonable person. I can't speak for her about what her thoughts about her son are, but I will just say, and I don't think that I'm trying to be honest. I feel deeply sad when I hear that and when I think about what that represents. How did he become the person that he is? He's not going to listen to any of her advice there. He is going to fan the flames. He is going to demonize people. He is going to obsessively talk about what control Republicans should have over other people's bodies. Like all that stuff that she desperately hopes that he won't do, he's going to do. and she's going to have to watch it. And I guess still on some level be proud of him, but also she'll have to recognize that this is what she has brought into the world. And she, like every parent, did her best to try to instill her values, and something else took hold. I don't know if it's the dad, we haven't heard from him, if it's a bad experience at school, or if it's just him learning what you need to say to make big bucks at Fox, but he has diverged quite a bit from the values that she seems to hold, and the whole thing makes me sad. I kind of wish they hadn't done it, Michael. I didn't need to see that.
Well, I think Jesse Waters wishes that they hadn't done it either. Even said, I knew this was a bad idea. I applaud Jesse Waters in a sense, because we shouldn't just be who our parents believe that they are, and we shouldn't just adopt our parents' beliefs because they do, because more bad comes from that than good, generally speaking. But in this case, it went the other way, clearly. And this stuff's always fascinating to me. Like, what is it that clicked in Jesse Waters if he was clearly exposed to this kind of approach from his mom? And like you said, we don't know his dad, we don't know anything, we don't know the theater, and we don't know what he believes inside, or if this is all performance art. But at the same time, it is a fascinating thing. But I guess he gets some credit for not just being a robot of his parents. And I wish more people were like that.
But then he spent literally years using the platform he has to demonize people with the literal least in our society. It just makes you so mad.
No. I'm not saying I wish more people were like Jesse Waters. I just wish most of the racists in America who become racist because of their parents would see the light there in that way.
I agree. Okay, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, some chaos at the border, revelations of how border agents are treating migrants is absolutely horrific. We're gonna give you the details after this. Emails that have been shared with CNN by the Texas Department of Public Safety have detailed concerns that a trooper medic had shared with their supervisor about the way that migrants are being treated along the border in Eagle Pass, Texas. And this is about as bad as you can imagine, what the sort of standard operating procedures are, how they treat people desperately trying to get into the United States. The trooper wrote in one of the emails that they, quote, were given orders to push the people back into the water to go to Mexico, and we're also ordered not to give water to the migrants. So if somebody makes it across the river, you literally push them into the water where people routinely drown. You push the adults, you push the kids, and if they make it far enough away from the river, and perhaps during this apocalyptic heat wave that we're experiencing, if they need water, you don't give it to them, and if they die, they die. Now, these are very serious charges that are being made from a literal insider. So you would think the government there is gonna take this very seriously. Well, here's what a spokesperson for Governor Abbott said in response. Texas is deploying every tool and strategy to deter and repel illegal crossings between ports of entry as President Biden's dangerous open border policies entice migrants from over 150 countries to risk their lives entering the country illegally. The absence of razor wire and other deterrent strategies encourages migrants to make unsafe and illegal crossings between ports of entry while making the job of Texas National Guard soldiers and DPS troopers more dangerous and difficult. President Biden has unleashed a chaos on the border that's unsustainable, and we have a constitutional duty to respond to this unprecedented crisis. Hey, wait, there's nothing there about the fact that they're advising their troopers to kill people. That's weird. I feel like that's the part that I would respond to. No, instead, it's there wasn't razor wire to cut people. There weren't buoys in the water to make people drown. Don't worry, we've fixed that. That's the benefit. And that's not chaos, by the way. The chaos was that President Biden has open border policies, which is of course a joke. They continued many of the same policies from Donald Trump on the border. And because of his open border policies, people are trying to cross the border, something that had never happened before. Before President Biden became president, that wasn't a thing. It certainly didn't happen while Trump was president. So all of this can be put on him. And if either informally or formally, we're telling our troopers to kill people at the border, we don't even feel the need to dignify that with a specific response. We're just gonna cut a campaign ad against President Biden and then move on with our lives. Well, this does have a human cost. We're gonna detail some of that human cost in a moment, but Michael, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, in the first graphic you showed, they say just following orders. We were given orders. We were given orders. Where have we heard just following orders before?
Yeah.
It's history repeating itself. People using that as an excuse. Well, you just followed the orders, but you were following orders to do something that was so cruel and inhumane and potentially murderous that you cannot use that ever as an excuse. The other side of that coin is the open borders thing. If there were open borders, there wouldn't be people trying to get into the country. They would be walking into the country. There wouldn't be a line of humanity across the southern border of the United States, in some places in the northern border of the United States, being pushed back by our laws and processes here. And so I think that that's, the people need to really call it out when someone says open borders, because open borders is not something that they have in the United States. But Greg Abbott can talk about it in Texas, and then someone who I speak to in South Carolina can tell me that we have open borders and Biden has open borders, when in fact it is a mimeograph. It is an absolute carbon copy of what the Trump administration is doing.
Exactly. Well, look, there's a lot that they could have talked about in their response from Governor Abbott. To be fair, he's probably busy with the heat wave that he's also doing nothing to stop from happening. The heat wave that nobody could have predicted, because there haven't been intense periods of both heat in the summer and cold in the winter that Texas desperately needs to do something about, that results in people dying all the time in Texas. Nobody could have seen it coming. So he's probably busy with that. Anyway, in one 7-hour period late last month, according to the email, two medics from the State Department of Public Safety said that they treated a 4-year-old girl who passed out in 100-degree heat after Texas National Guard personnel pushed the group she was in back towards Mexico. So a 4-year-old girl nearly died of heat exposure because they just said, go, we don't want you here. A man with a significant laceration on his leg suffered when he tried to rescue his child from razor wire placed on a deterrence buoy in the Rio Grande. That's the razor wire that they were so proud of in the official statement from Governor Abbott's office. A 15-year-old boy with a broken leg suffered when he tried to cross a more dangerous part of the river away from the buoys. And a 19-year-old woman trapped in razor wire having a miscarriage. All of this being pushed and encouraged by people who will tell you that they are just following their like strongly held religious beliefs. This is the world we need to have. All of these people desperately trying to get into the United States deserve heat stroke and lacerations, miscarriages caused by trauma, drownings, broken limbs. All of that is acceptable and needs to be continued. But tell us more about how you're trying to protect the children. And by the way, like, I know that there is no chance that a single one of these conservatives is ever going to spend a nanosecond thinking about what is actually in the mind of a migrant who's trying to cross over. Like, what would have to be true of the life that is awaiting you were you to be turned back south, that you would be willing to suffer these things, knowing that this is what happens, that people drown, that people die of the heat, and you still are willing to do it? Maybe a little bit of empathy, maybe just a brief moment to think about what that is like and what we can potentially do to help these people. People with the tenacity and the drive to cross all of these obstacles maybe could contribute in a positive way towards our country. But no, there's no thought, there's no compassion. Just throw them back into the river. And maybe if Trump becomes president, we can stock it with crocodiles. That was an actual plan that they discussed. Michael, any other thoughts?
I mean, there's not much to say about that. That is something that they did discuss, that there were people suggesting crocodiles be put in there. I mean, these are medieval times, and this is not how you treat people. It's not to say that we don't have flaws on our border, but they're not as egregious as many people say. We do have processes by which people apply for asylum in this country. And to again villainize those people right from the get-go is inhuman. And that's what Greg Abbott has sort of ushered in for quite a while. There were other governors of Texas who did not take this tack, but this is what the trickle down from Donald Trump is.
Yeah. By the way, last year, 748 people that we know of died crossing the US-Mexico border. That is a massive, like almost unimaginable tragedy. But I realize as I say that, why am I even saying this? Like that's going to persuade someone to change their mind about this policy? Like, well, I don't want hundreds more people to die, so I guess we should do something. We're way past that point. We all know that we lived through the pandemic. We all know that, what, 100 million people were encouraged to and became perfectly comfortable with hundreds of thousands of people needlessly dying so that you don't have to wear a mask or whatever. You don't have to maintain social distance. You don't have to stay home. If we have to construct a literal mountain of needless corpses, well, that's liberty, baby. Once you've accepted that, what's 748 migrants dying? They literally will not even hear that fact on Fox News or on any of these sites. So I guess we'll just move on with our day. Anyway, we're gonna turn to some more domestic political news back towards the election, but not the presidential election. Let's jump into this D block. Back in 2022, you might not remember that one of the most notorious right-wingers in Congress, Lauren Boebert, came within like a razor's distance of not getting re-election. She won her seat by 546 votes over Democrat Adam Frisch. And in the wake of that, there's a couple of different directions she could go in. It could be a reminder that perhaps that district, perhaps Colorado, not as radical as she thinks, maybe go down the road of being reasonable, try a little bit of bipartisanship to win over some of the independents, maybe a few of the Democrats. That is not the direction that she has gone in, and it could prove catastrophic for her in 2024. You might recall some of her recent moves. Back in January, she and Matt Gaetz nearly got Kevin McCarthy not sworn in as speaker. She missed the biggest vote of the year, a vote to raise the debt ceiling that she had opposed. And up until like last week, she is still coming up with new lies and explanations as to why she missed that vote. Last month, she infuriated members of the GOP and her colleagues by trying to force a floor vote on impeaching Joe Biden over the border. That is the thing that got her called multiple times by Marjorie Greene a little bitch, a feud that she's continued with Marjorie Greene ever since then. And she's trying to hold up government funding bills, raises to members of the armed forces, basically a lot of stuff that doesn't seem like it's gonna be super popular with her constituents. And according to Republicans, they don't understand why she's doing this either. Dick Wadhams, former chairman of the Colorado Republican Party for 4 years, said a lot of Republicans have been bewildered by her. She has not changed her operating style, either substantively or just generally, saying she's paid more attention to fighting these battles than she has to her district. One, a House GOP lawmaker said, her ass needs to get home to go campaign, cut ribbons, go to bar mitzvahs, and take credit for stuff she had absolutely nothing to do with. But that's not really what she's doing. What do you think, Michael? Think we can take her down in 2024?
I think there are not a lot of bar mitzvahs to go to in the town of Rifle, Colorado, where she's
no,
from.
Maybe not.
But yeah, I mean, I think that Frisch will probably beat her. I think that her even, you know, the difference between what Green and Boebert represent is that Green is typical of the people in her community and the people that vote and believe the way that they do in Rome, Georgia, and the environs there, as opposed to Boebert, who is really not emblematic of a Colorado Republican, and certainly maybe in that district there's a little bit more. They're more like her, but she's not playing to her minions there, so she has to be super careful, which is what I think that lat person said. So
yeah. Well, and look, it was within 546 votes without much of an investment from national Democrats. I imagine this is one of the races that they're gonna target because they desperately need to make up that just 5-seat margin, which they also have George Santos probably not gonna get reelected. Like, I would pour a couple $1 million into this easy. So it would be great to replace
New York and California, and it's almost a foregone conclusion with what's gonna happen in New York. But again, we can't conclude in a foregone way. But
you're talking about George Santos?
Not George Santos, the redistricting in New York, that the court has handed down district maps that are different. And I think Democrats in California are going to be chasing seats that they believe they shouldn't have lost and will likely win. It's not to say it's all going to happen. Plus, they get another seat in different states because of rulings that came out of the Supreme Court. It's looking in the favor of a Democratic majority. But if they don't do well and they don't legislate, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, a lot of factors I think that could be good for the Democrats in 2024. All of that could be overwhelmed by a presidential candidate on the Republican side that really draws in a lot of independents like Donald Trump. That could be a real boost nationally to them. I'm kidding. Anyway, that's all the time we have for the first hour, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Much more to come in the aftermath though, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.